Hello and welcome back to Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen, President and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting. I want to welcome everybody back for another episode of the podcast. And today's topic is going to be one of our most popular topics, which is around fundraising. And it's a really interesting study that is about to be published. And to join us in the conversation is a friend and colleague of mine, Jane Pfeiffer. Jane and her team recently undertook a study to learn a little bit more about donor motivations, donor perceptions that can help nonprofit leaders as you shape your marketing, as you shape your messages, and build stronger relationships with your donors. Jane, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be back. You know, everything we do gets harder every day. And so maybe we have something that makes it a little easier for us in the nonprofit world.
That's always the goal, Jane. And bringing this type of information to our listeners, to the nonprofit community, is why we host the podcast. Jane, first, give us a little bit of background on the study itself. What led you to come up with this idea? Just maybe frame the background of the study for those who are not familiar with it.
Yeah. So, Greg, and just, you know, for everyone that's listening again, you know, my firm is called Field Trip, and we're a marketing agency that help nonprofits reduce their largest expense, which is the cost of lost opportunities because people don't know you, don't understand the importance of your mission or how it impacts their world. And so, you know, the assets that we create for our clients have to be just that, assets that empower our nonprofit leaders to do more without spending more and investing more time and energy. And we had certain philosophies around the ways we should approach supporters, meaning donors of organizations, but thought it would be a great opportunity to really let's prove our philosophies right or wrong or evolve them. And so we worked with a research firm to interview 400 supporters across the United States. These are supporters of social welfare organizations, and get their attitudes about why they give, what they look for, what they think about the beneficiaries, the recipients of the mission, and how we can best speak to them and cultivate ongoing relationships.
I love the backdrop of this study, Jane, because it's an attempt to build stronger relationships. We know from all the data across the country that nonprofits that have a stronger relationship, that understand their donors and have donors that understand the mission of the nonprofit, are much more effective when it comes to fundraising. Knowing why people give, why people don't give, what are those topics or aspects of your organization that resonate with your supporters? So tell me, you identified 400 supporters from across the country. Were these supporters of all different sizes and shapes of organizations, or specific parameters that you had?
Yeah, so the parameters just had to be, you know, active supporters, meaning donors or volunteers of nonprofit organizations in the United States in the past year. And they self-identified as being supporters and being active supporters. So we do have a number of organizations. And I think attitudinal research and messaging is applicable to every nonprofit, but our questions were very specific to, you know, human health, you know, social justice and social welfare type initiatives, because we do dig into, you know, how do you help those that are maybe most unlike the people who have the financial and connections and skills to really support the mission.
Jane, as you deployed this study, as you reached out to these supporters, what were you finding in terms of the response rate? Was there an appetite to provide this type of information? Was there reluctance on the part of supporters to share their thoughts, their feelings? I'm always curious about that response.
Yeah, so I think, you know, what we found is that about a third of the population identified as supporters. And of those that identified and met those qualifications, they were all in. They were very revealing and very honest about the reasons why they give. And some of them are selfless and some of them are self-identity motivated. Not that there's a bad or a good reason, but there are some that are rooted more in, healthy long-term relationships and solving social issues versus status or recognition, if I might say.
So, Jane, before we go any further, I think we want to dive right into the results. I think everybody is probably curious as to what were the big takeaways. So, if there was an executive summary, what are the big bullet point takeaways that your team learned?
Yeah. And, so there's these three attitudes. And one of the things that, you know how sometimes you're like so close to something that it just makes sense and you forget that it's might be unique. And so as marketers, we tend to think of our audiences as groups of attitudes. And so one of the things that was illustrated for us is, as nonprofiters and fundraisers, we tend to think about lapsed donors, recurring donors, legacy givers, these characteristics, whether they're demographic or time-based or geography-based. And what simplifies all of that is kind of putting that aside and really thinking about the attitudes, the why behind they give. So the research identified three distinct groups, and ironically, it's about a third. So the third of, the people that we interviewed identified as supporters, and that supporter group divided really 34, 33, and 33% into three groups. So the first group is an empathetic supporter. Now, for the empathetic supporter, they are, really come from a culture of giving. It's part of their identity. They really believe in the cause and that we could all be in a position where we need support. They believe that the beneficiaries, could be any one of us at any given time. They're motivated to think about solutions to really big problems. And the more people and the more we focus on it and prioritize it, the better chances we have of solving that or at least reducing it. So for the empathetic supporter, it's really about belief in the bigger picture. These are our dream supporters because it's not a transaction, it's a belief in a solution. And if you have them on, your list, it's a belief in your solution and your mission. They have a very open opinion of the recipients of your mission. They withhold judgment and just think that it could happen to any one of us. So let's help everyone, even if this might be their second time or, multiple times coming to, an agency or nonprofit for support.
So
So that's a high,
I could certainly
yeah.
see how how understanding your donor base and understanding your supporters and who might fit into that category could really help you hone in on your message and the way you connect and build relationships and steward those supporters. I'm curious, what's the second and the third categories as well?
Okay, so the second is a bit of an oxymoron because it's a skeptical supporter. So that sounds contrary, but they are still supporters. They give, but they support nonprofits primarily because they get admiration from family and friends for doing so. So it's that recognition. They feel guilty if they don't do something, to help others. And they're much more skeptical of the beneficiaries, the recipients themselves. They feel like it's, the result of making bad choices in life. The recipients are very different from me, and they may have brought challenges on themselves. So again, that it feels very negative. It feels like it comes from a place of pity, and we have to recognize that, yes, but they still have the propensity to give. And so what we need to do with this audience, it's very delicate. It's about we have to explain the context in which, when we're telling stories, the people need help, that they are the result of not just a bad choice, but a series of things in their control and outside of their control that led to this situation, that it's not as easy as go get a job. We'll just stop doing that. That it's complex, and kind of explaining and giving that context is really important. It's also really important for the skeptical supporter because they're skeptical of the organizations as well. So they won't necessarily do research before they give, but they do want to know exactly how their dollars were used. So your communication after a gift is the most important. Be as specific and as transparent as possible, and you have an opportunity to deepen a relationship with this particular group.
Jane, this is, I imagine, as a marketer, a really delicate one. I can see clear pathways to communicate with the empathetic supporter, the enthusiastic supporter. The skeptical supporter strikes me as a really delicate balance as a marketer, because on the one hand, you want to reach them, you want to connect with them, you want to make sure that they see the value in your organization. On the other hand, you want to make sure that you don't further victimize or stigmatize the population that you are working with. So I'm curious, as a marketer, any tools or strategies that you would recommend for leaders as they think about how to wrestle with this conundrum of this group of supporters?
I think one of the things that we can do is really take a look at like using messaging as an example, how that might be different, because we have to be efficient with time, and skeptical supporters don't wear green, and you know who they are and you can find them. They might blend in with everyone. So when we think about the messaging, we might think about here's an example that we have in our executive summary. So for the skeptical supporter, losing your job, it could happen to any of us. For Greg, losing his job meant losing his home and escaping his anxiety through addiction. But the recovery program at nonprofit brought Greg back from the brink. Now he's one of, a number of program graduates who make us a leader in self-driven recovery solutions. Learn how our nonprofit, can support these in need and turn bad luck into bright futures. So, yes, they're in a tough spot, but we explain how a chain of events put them in that tough spot. And they didn't turn to substance abuse because they were lazy. It's because of the anxiety and the stress and, lived experiences in there. So, trying to do that from a way that doesn't add, more shame. Or even rewards the skeptical supporter for any sense of pity, but giving context. And then to some extent, recognizing, I hate to say the hero, but recognizing that need to be recognized from the skeptical supporter as, hey, you're taking care of others, and that's a good thing for you to do.
And Jane, did I understand correctly? You said about a third of the respondents fell in that skeptical supporter. I imagine that's a number that's higher than many nonprofit leaders listening, might want to think about.
And you probably don't have deep relationships with these. However, we did see in our research that skeptical supporters are the most likely to show up at like social events, galas, those types of things. Again, when I thought about it a little longer, it's like, well, I'm being recognized for my attendance, my support. That's not everyone. But that group, far more than others, tends to prioritize that as a way in which they engage with the nonprofit.
Excellent. And now, Jane, the finale, the third group.
Okay, so the third group is our disconnected supporters. Exactly what it says. They're, this is, Greg, not a continuum. So our goal is not to shift, from one segment to another segment. These values and attitudes are deeply rooted in their own experiences, their culture of giving that they grew up in and what they created. There's almost zero difference, though, in demographics across the group. So one doesn't skew younger or older, but for the disconnected supporter, they are a little bit more passive. They're less judgmental, except in the case when you have a beneficiary, a mission recipient who might be on their second and third cycle. So let's say they've been convicted of a crime two and three times. they're in their, you know, multiple, you know, instance of being in a recovery program. The disconnected supporter does feel there is a limit to how much we can and should help, but they're really waiting to be inspired or feel some type of personal connection. We know that a personal connection, whether that's our personal experience, an experience of a friend or family member, but even things like documentaries, you know, the recent news, these things are proven through this research to really motivate people to become curious and dig in. And with the disconnected supporter, that is indeed the case. Once they become educated, they can become, you know, very consistent supporters, but we have to recognize there's an educational process. So just the kind of warm and fuzzy story won't do quite enough with this particular group.
Are they the group that sometimes in some of the philanthropy research that's out there, we talk about people who give because of logic, right? They are looking for a solution that makes sense to them, a solution that actually solves a problem once and for all, rather than kind of creating repetitive cycles. Sometimes that's not reality, that's not life, but those are folks who are looking at issues through a more logic lens rather than through a more empathetic lens.
You know, that's a great question. And while we did not ask about logic, it sounds like it would be very appropriate because this group is very pragmatic. You know, we asked all respondents about the role of empathy, not only towards beneficiaries and where they are currently, but the responsibility of the nonprofit in creating empathy. And the disconnected supporters said things like, I don't think organizations can create empathy. It has to be felt. You either have it or you don't have it. You can't create it. It comes from within. So again, a very logical, rational, you know, answer to a question that was, you know, asked of all. And so they either have it or they don't. And you know, you can woo them and bring them closer, but again, it's just a different style of messaging and a different attitude that you need to think through.
Jane, I think this study speaks to the experience that I hear often from nonprofit leaders, which is that we're communicating often. We're putting a lot of content out into the universe, and it's resonating with some, and it's not resonating with others. And it sounds like from your research that's supported in the sense that people are approaching their support, their approach to philanthropy, their personal philosophy of giving from a very different experience. And so some of those messages may be connecting and others may just not be hitting the mark. And so there's the value of tailoring the approach and obviously getting to know where on that continuum, that spectrum, your supporters might be falling.
Yeah, and anytime you know, even say tailoring communications, I mean, we know that's more effective, but it's also so overwhelming because we're doing so many things. You know, so getting that e-newsletter out once a month, what do you know, there's no way I can tailor it. So I often encourage people to think about that tailorization a different way, if tailorization is a word, and think about the ripples within a story. So, you know, telling the, you know, the human-centric story of, you know, here's where they were, here's where they are now, is probably enough for the empathetic supporter. But explaining a little bit about the context of what got them in a bad spot where they needed support is helpful for skeptical supporters, and also explaining why your organization is the best, not just by claiming it, but using proof points like the number of graduates, the success rate, the number of lives impacted, the economic impact. So, both the context of what created the issue and then the proof that you make it happen. And for disconnected, it's really about layering onto that study or that story, excuse me, just points of education. That, you know, let's take our messaging example that recovery doesn't work often on the first time, and that it's hard. And, you know, that these certain scenarios, you know, if you don't have to worry about housing or, you know, all these other life anxieties and you can focus, then that removes the pressure and you can focus on the most important thing. that can be woven into a story, and it can be one story, but kind of have language for each of these three groups. And I think it's much easier and more efficient to do it that way, as opposed to thinking of, okay, I've got my lapsed donors who, well, what do they want to hear from me versus my legacy donors versus my event attendees? You have to guess at what they want to hear because you don't really know, you know, what place they're in this particular month for your newsletter. So using attitudes versus these kind of categories or characteristics can actually simplify it once you practice it and look through that lens a little more.
Really fascinating results, Jane. We're going to be publishing this podcast episode in mid-April 2024. For folks who would like to get a hold of the study and read it for themselves and digest it, what is the best way for people to access the study and also potentially connect with you?
Yeah, you can visit wearefieldtrip.com/research. And there you can download the executive summary. You'll also have a link to look at the visualization of the data. There are many more questions and things that you can look at from, what they want to hear from a nonprofit. How do they consider transparency and a number of different questions. And on that same webpage, you can always reach me, Jane Pfeiffer or Jane P at wearefieldtrip.com.
Jane, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. For those of you who are enjoying the podcast, I encourage you to share it with your friends, your coworkers, your colleagues, so that we can continue to build this nonprofit vision community. If you're enjoying the podcast, remember to leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. And in the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and we'll be back with another episode soon.